beat the Georgia Bulldogs, you're gonna feel the bulldog.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Row 60, Georgia Football Podcast. My name is Clark Gaines. Joining me today, as always, Adam Thornton.
Boom!
And this is show number 115. This week, your Georgia Bulldogs take on the Austin Peay Governors.
Austin Peay Governors, great mascot name, Clark.
Oh, yeah.
I love the authenticity that they have up there in Tennessee at the University of Austin Peay, or Austin Peay University. I don't know the proper way to describe what that school is, what they go by, but the Governors, great mascot, great logo. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So, I mean, that's all I mean, I start off the show saying something good about Austin Peay, man.
Right.
And that's what I'm going to say. Big fan of the Governors, big fan of their color patterns, red and black. So, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, everything else that we're going to say about them might not be so great because Georgia is going to absolutely steamroll these guys. So we think, so we hope. But on this episode, we're going to be talking about Georgia versus Austin Peay. Talking about the game, we've got some history for you guys. We've got what we expect to see on offense and defense this upcoming Saturday. We've got the new AP poll. We've got some reactions to that. That's interesting.
New AP poll.
Yeah.
Love it.
And then also looking ahead to this week, this Saturday, we've got a decent slate of games, not a whole lot of great games this Saturday, Adam. But live college football is college football nonetheless, and we will not complain here on Row 60.
Yeah, week two always seems like it's a lull. Every single year, you know, you get fired up about a lot of handful of marquee matchups that you get opening up college football season from Thursday to Monday night, man. And week two always, it kind of seems like people who have those marquee matchups play a cupcake that following week, man, and then either teams open up with cupcakes, got another cupcake, go ahead and get another out-of-conference game in that second week as well. And then really the third week is when it ramps up, some in-conference play, scattered with a few more decent out-of-conference games as well. So, yeah, it's kind of like just this week two. You never want to wish away football season
right in
advance, but week two always traditionally, man, just seems like it's one of those weeks that it's kind of like, it's football. We're happy to have it, but you're ready to start. You're kind of itching to start conference play, seeing how we're going to fare against some of these conference rivals and everything. But it's going to be fun. It's football. It's live football. We've missed it. And a few games, like you said, they're going to be fun to keep an eye on. But I was thinking about that today. I was like, man, there's really just one or two I can think of.
Right.
So, yeah.
So all that and a lot more on this episode. But let's first start off by shouting out somebody, Adam.
Shout them out.
We're going to shout out Patrick O'Connor for becoming a Row 60 patron. Patrick is from South Carolina. He's in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah. So the heart of South Carolina Gamecock country,
right,
man. Patrick, we appreciate that, brother.
Yeah.
God bless you out there fighting the good fight against the fighting Shane Beamers. Everybody who is just blinded by their just garnet and black glasses that they got going on after their just impressive win over Virginia Tech Sunday in Atlanta. So, Patrick, keep fighting the good fight. Wear that red and black proudly, man, and don't let them get under your skin or anything. Over there in enemy territory, we love you. We have you have our support over there.
Yeah, thank God Patrick is not not only just is he not a South Carolina fan, he's not a Clemson fan either, living over there in South Carolina.
He was raised right, man. That's all I can say. So I'm sure I've never gotten to meet Patrick. I hadn't had that opportunity yet, but thankful that he's over there in another state. And we've talked about this with our out-of-state dogs, how much we appreciate them not being able to be in the friendly confines of the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, with surrounded by your brothers and sisters here in red and black, that you're out there kind of just wandering through the wilderness, but still fighting the good fight.
Right.
And we're thankful for that.
That's awesome.
Here at Row 60.
Yes. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on Patreon. Hey, and if you're not a patron, what you can do is go to patreon.com/row60, or you can download the Patreon app and search us, Row 60. It's just $5 a month, and what it does is unlocks new content for you guys to watch and enjoy for your entertainment. And every single penny that we earn from that, we reinvest into Row 60 so that we can make more content for not only our patrons, but for everybody, and that, travel to more games.
Yeah, that we do. We appreciate that.
That's the best way to help us out here on Row 60 is to become a patron, and you also get something in return. So we got a lot more content here coming up for you guys, and we can't wait for it. So
yeah, we can, especially when these games, big atmospheres start ramping up. We got something up our sleeve, so keep an eye on that in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into some history here between Georgia and Austin Peay. It's kind of short. It's a condensed list of history.
I mean, probably some just slugfest throughout the years against the Austin Peay governors,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Georgia's only met Austin Peay one other time. Yes. We're obviously being sarcastic, by the way, for anybody who didn't catch that. Only met one other time, 2018. We beat Austin Peay, the governors, 45-0 in Sanford Stadium.
Ah, yes.
You remember that game?
Yeah, that was the season opener that year, correct?
I think you're right, yeah. Sounds like it. It was a September 1st kick. So, yeah.
It would have been, yes. So, it would have been coming off the high of the season that was 2017, the SEC Championship, and a lot of high hopes there with Jake Fromm coming into his sophomore year. And I remember that game very well, actually. Sure do.
You remember
Him out, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Do you remember Justin Fields playing any of that game? Because he did.
He did, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you had the hype around him as a true freshman coming in. So, yeah, that was an exciting time right there. And it was right before we went to Columbia, South Carolina, and blew out, speaking of South Carolina, the Gamecocks and Williams-Brice.
Mm-hmm. I remember that game. That was fun. But, yeah, Austin Peay, really not a whole lot to say here, but we do have some different quotes. We've got some different things, different statistics on them. We don't necessarily have a good scouting report on these guys just because we don't know too much about them.
Look,
but
there's no Austin Peay forums out there to go check the pulse of the fan base. I haven't been able to see if there's anybody, any governor fans on Twitter complaining about offensive line play or the quarterback pushing the ball downfield or any of the likes, right? So really don't have a good pulse and feel on what they're thinking of Tennessee, the Austin Peay governors. But according to their schedule and me just kind of putting two and two together and connecting some dots, Clark, they have to be riding pretty high after their win over Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah.
That had to have been a big upset to them because Middle Tennessee State, I mean, it was a Conference USA team, and Austin Peay's in what? What'd you say, the United Athletic Atlantic Conference?
Yeah, they're in the UAC, United Atlantic Conference. And you're right, Adam. Austin Peay is an FCS team. They are not FBS like Georgia, like Middle Tennessee State, and many other teams out there. But, yeah, as you were saying, Austin Peay did upset. Yes, it is an upset. Middle Tennessee State last week in Murfreesboro.
They went to Murfreesboro and put it on the Blue Raiders.
They sure did.
That right there, I guarantee you some people in Murfreesboro wearing that that light blue and gray are kind of having some gut check time. Right
now.
When you get when the in-state team like Austin Peay comes in and punches you in the mouth in Murfreesboro, I mean, this was supposed to be a tune-up game before. You're the tune-up, right? Because I'm sure they're going to go play some high-caliber teams, the Blue Raiders are. So that kind of there's got to be some question marks going around the facilities in Murfreesboro tonight, man, after an in-state team like Austin Peay coming in there and doing it. So, hey, good job on the Austin Peay coaching staff, I think, in their second year, Clark, going up there and popping a Middle Tennessee State team that they probably didn't have any business beating by 20 points. I'm really just really hoping that was the case, but it just seems like it, looking at it on paper, that should be the case, right? So good on them. Good on them. They're going to be riding high coming into Athens.
Yeah, they took them to the woodshed. And Adam, listen to this. Last week's win versus Middle Tennessee State was Austin Peay's first win over an FBS team since 1987.
Oh, man.
That was before you and I were born.
They probably didn't sleep in Clarksville, Tennessee that night.
No,
I think they're in Clarksville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, they probably did. They're flying high then.
Oh yeah.
Good on them. Or they could be hungover, as far as coming in sleepwalking. You know, kind of not using the 24-hour rule, right?
Clark, you think they're still celebrating?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, the 24-hour rule of enjoy it 24 hours, and then it's time to get back to business, right? So, we're really gonna see what kind of culture has been ingrained in the second year up there in Clarksville, Tennessee from the Austin Peay program when they come into Athens, where their mindset is, right?
Yeah, I like it. Oh, my gosh. Well, this is Georgia's last out-of-conference game before starting SEC play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a tune-up game for Georgia here. And with a win this Saturday, which we're going to assume is going to happen.
Right.
Georgia will improve its home winning streak to 33 games.
Well, good.
Is the longest current streak in college football.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good. Good. They better. They better.
We better.
They should. But, two out-of-conference games to open the year, then sandwich in between the meat and potatoes portion, the ham, the turkey, and everything in the sandwiches, the conference play, and then the other end of the loaf bread is Charlotte and Georgia Tech at the very end of the season.
There you go. So
that's what we got coming up.
Oh, man. Yep, that's true. That's true. So, Georgia, just some more notes for you guys. Georgia is 0-9 against the spread in last nine games versus FCS opponents. So if you are betting, if there even is a line, there probably won't be for this game, but if there is a line, there's a spread, I would take Austin Peay probably.
Would you?
Yeah.
Clark the Gambler Gaines with your three-team parlay hit that you had this week.
My three-team parlay did not hit.
Just call
three games.
Just call him Kenny Rogers over here.
Just the gambler. Yeah.
Getting it done.
Oh, man. Yeah, shout out to Chris Johnson and Baylor Terrell. They kind of advised me on what to do, what a parlay is, how it works and everything. So, yeah, but I just threw $20. Don't think I'm sitting here degenerate gambler or anything.
No, $20, man. I mean, people, $20 won't get you far these days.
No.
You know, so, but yeah, if you had spare to do it, I mean, it was a good time. Probably had some, I know I had the conversation about your parlay. It was worth your $20 to me.
Just for that conversation.
For the conversation. So I appreciate you doing that.
It did keep me involved and interested in other games. So. But anyway, yeah, Georgia, 0-9 against the spread in last nine games versus FCS opponents. So don't take Georgia this week if you are betting against the spread.
I don't know, man.
If there even is a line. You don't know? You think we're just going to cover it outright no matter what?
I think this week maybe. Okay. You got a gut feel.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a spread yet or a number, so who knows? We have won those games, those nine games, though, by an average of 37 points. So, I mean, obviously, as you should against the FCS team. Austin Peay, they have covered in the last two games versus SEC opponents in 2022 and 2023. So, yeah, some interesting betting statistics there. Use that to your advantage if you want to. I'm not saying do one or the other. This is not gambling advice. Go to 1-800-GAMBLER if you're having problems.
Hey, Josh Pate.
don't take my advice, but I'm just throwing that out there. So. Fun stuff.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good stuff right there. Huh?
Kirby Smart, though. He's got a lot of respect for this team, Adam. And I quote, "I have a lot of respect for this team," Coach Kirby Smart said Tuesday afternoon in a news conference. Kirby said they played a good Middle Tennessee team, jumped on them, and played really well. They've done a great job with their program. They're twitchy, quick, and disruptive on defense. And they keep you off balance, Adam.
You know what I love about Kirby Paul Smart? No coach speak.
None
whatsoever. No. Just straight to the point. Yep. Just throwing out what is just, you know, on the top of the cranium and let the people know about it. Love that there's just no coach speak out of Kirby Paul. That he gives us good quotes weekly.
Absolutely. He said their defensive coordinator, Greg Jones, was at Tennessee Tech last year and does a great job. Adam, you got any intel on Greg Jones there?
Yeah, Greg Jones, man. They Austin Peay went and swiped the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles defense coordinator, Greg Jones.
Okay.
I think he spent some time at Rice.
All right.
Greg Jones did. Yeah. Maybe. Or was that the offense coordinator when I was doing my homework? I don't remember. Let's see. Yeah. Greg Jones, I don't really know. I do know he just came from Tennessee. Gardner Webb. He was a Gardner Webb Bulldog for a little bit.
Interesting.
So he's been kind of around that kind of that arena of teams in that league. So I don't really know as far as competition level, if Austin Peay was a upgrade or a lateral move from Tennessee Tech, I'm assuming it was an upgrade over the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles coaching staff. So yeah, Greg Jones, I think a guy who obviously was on the Tennessee Tech sidelines over there in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Yeah,
and he knows the state.
Hey, Adam, he knows the talent. He knows our offense. Tennessee Tech played us last year, right? Or was that 2 years ago?
I don't remember.
I think it was last year.
Tennessee Martin. We played Tennessee Martin.
No, we played Tennessee Martin, but we played Tennessee Tech last year. I'm almost positive. Let's look this up right quick. Fact check here. Yeah, September 7th, 2024. Right, second game of the year last year. So he knows.
He was on the sideline, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I'll be dang.
So, look at this is old Greg's second time playing in Sanford Stadium.
In Athens in 2 years. There we go. Yeah. Good catch right there, Clark.
Do you think that really spells trouble for Georgia's offense? The fact that the defense coordinator has been on two separate teams in the past 365 days.
I love that we're getting some talking points with this matchup right now.
There's not a whole lot to say.
I like it. Yeah, but I mean, that's interesting, man. I mean, it's something that the head coach, Jeff Ferris, is really just trying to build a culture, bringing these guys in right now. So I'm sure they're going to try to piggyback off their big-time opening season win. against Middle Tennessee State, build some momentum, come up, play hard, right?
Sure.
Work on fundamentals, be fundamentally sound, be disciplined, yeah. Kind of work on, you know, trying to limit as many penalties as possible and just improve week to week. I mean, Nick Saban said it best. I mean, you know, each team in college football, probably at any level from week one to week two, is their greatest jump of improvement.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that you just said that because the coach, Ferris, he said coach this. Ferris. Yeah, he said this. Hold up just a second. Let me find this quote. Yeah, that's interesting that you said it. He said, "We have to be the most improved team in the country from week one to week two," said Ferris, who went 4-8 last year during his first season in Clarksville. "That's our challenge. Can we handle the success? I'm excited to see the way we come back to work." That's what he said after his win last week. So,
yeah, Jeff Ferris, man, in all seriousness, 33 years old, spent a lot of time at Duke under David Cutcliffe. David Cutcliffe, a great offensive mind from the 90s in Tennessee, and I think succeeded many years in his time at Duke as a head coach. Then he also was on Chip Kelly's UCLA staff as well before taking the Austin Peay job. So he's been around some great offensive minds, man, and I think he'll do a good job. His second year, and he beat Middle Tennessee State like he did. So I think that would be a name to look out for to see him climb the coaching ranks in years to come.
Yep, for sure. One more quote from Kirby here. "They have guys who run to the ball really well, and they are disruptive inside." Still talking about the defense here. "They understand their jobs and their gaps."
Okay.
No coaching speak, right? Your coaches speak, right?
No whatsoever.
Oh, man.
Obviously, I'm just kidding, Trav, because, I mean, that's just boring segments and headlines. I mean, I'm sure Kirby Smart just slip-walked through that press conference. Didn't want to be there whatsoever. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what Georgia coming out against another team like what Austin Peay, you know, one that's just not going to have the stadium just juiced. You usually don't have these opponents 2 weeks in a row in the season, Clark, because of UCLA canceling. It didn't go to Los Angeles to open up the year. It led to this would be the case that we'd play Marshall, then Austin Peay. You can't wait to see how this Georgia team responds as far as just enthusiasm, adrenaline. You know, you have that just initial, a lot of new guys getting their first start in Sanford Stadium against Marshall. So you kind of have that to kind of get you hyped and up for. But you've got that under your belt now. How do you create your own energy to come back against a team that's honestly probably not as good as Marshall? I don't really know where they'd stack up, but I mean, obviously Marshall's a Sun Belt team. That might be with all the transfers, new coaching staff, might be a lower level Sun Belt team, but a more competitive team on paper should be Marshall than Austin Peay. And how does this Georgia team respond? That's what I can't wait to see. It's going to tell a lot about the leadership this week to see where these guys have gotten coming into for a momentum standpoint, just motivation. Not sleepwalking, I guess, is a roundabout way of saying through this game, playing a second opponent that probably just doesn't get just the natural just juices flowing.
Right. Well, you know, look, Kirby is not going to let anybody out on that field who thinks and has that same mentality of, oh, well, it's just another FCS opponent, just another cupcake game. No.
Nah.
Kirby preaches this at practice too. I mean, you got to freaking love the game of football to play for Kirby Smart.
That's right.
And he's made that evident in the offseason, you know, fire, passion, energy. He has been repeating those three words throughout press conferences to his team and whatnot. And if you don't come out there with fire, passion, and energy this week, you're not going to get to play. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're the first string. It doesn't matter if you're the second, third, or fourth string. You're not getting on that field. And so, you know, that's kind of the message that I'm sure Kirby is preaching to his team is, hey, I mean, I don't care who it is. Go out there and have fun. Go dominate your opponent. Go do your little go do the little things right. And, you know, obviously win the game. So,
right. I agree 100%, man.
What you doing there?
I'm just preparing my notes.
Okay.
On the cellular device.
All right. So let's do this. Let's jump into a quick injury report before we get into what we expect from Georgia's offense and defense this coming Saturday. The first few guys I want to mention, Juan Gaston and then Ernest Green. According to Kirby, we might have them back next week. Time will tell. That's sort of the vibe we got during the press conference today. And then as far as Daylon Everett goes, ankle seems to be doing well. And he was able to run and do some things at practice earlier this week. And so that's a good sign. We can't afford to lose Dalen Everett. When we get into SEC play, we're going to need him. He's a big-time tackler out on the perimeter. So getting him back will be huge, but obviously he didn't play week one.
Yeah, yeah.
We're also kind of still dealing – Rob is kind of still dealing with a hamstring injury. Should be ready to go soon and add some much-needed depth to that running back room. Once again, before we enter SEC play, that's going to be big. And then last Absolutely. But certainly not least, Brett Thorson. Apparently he's close to getting cleared by the medical staff. We'll see.
Well, good.
But we got a good one in Drew Miller right behind him who's filling in for the time being. So,
yeah, obviously you want your punter, who's probably the best in America, definitely the best in the conference, to come back. But Drew Miller did a great job week one. Go ahead and get him some more reps in week two as well. As far as Dalen goes, I really like to see a lot of these guys just not play this week.
Yeah.
In the sense of just kind of rest of them. If there is some times and opportunities where coach feels like he can put them on the field and just knock a little rust off, then yeah, get them in there. But the last thing we need is to get banged up even more mm-hmm. going into the third week of the season
right.
and opening up SEC play on the road in Knoxville, Tennessee.
For sure.
So are we with Juan Gaston, Micah Morris, have you heard anything about him? I guess I'm assuming everything's good there.
I hope so. I tell you what, this is something we didn't mention last episode. Zachariah Branch, when he fell down.
Oh, man.
We didn't see it from where we were sitting at row 60. On the TV, it's very clear it's just a cramp. Thank the Lord that it was just a cramp. But when we were up in the stands.
Looked like a torn ACL.
Yes. I mean, we both just like, you know, surrender Cobra and looked around like, my gosh, this would happen week one to one of our best players. So.
Thankfully,
that did not
happen. Old lady look, smiling down, thankfully. Yeah. Thankfully. Yeah.
Speaking of offense, speaking of Zachariah Branch, let's dive into Georgia's offense. Yeah. What do we expect to see this week from this Georgia team who put up 45 points last week against Marshall? Do we expect more from them? What do we expect from Gunner, I think? That's a good place to start here.
I think just to continue to get comfortable in leading this offense and being the guy. Again, doing what he did last week, improving on areas that he was able to sit down in the film room with the offensive staff and go over and continue just to progress in that and keep doing what he's doing, man. I love his pocket awareness as far as just when he knows that it's time to tuck the football and run. There's no hesitation about it and losing seconds of being able to get outside the pocket and tuck it and run it. He just knows that that's it. Trust that instinct. Bang, tuck the football and go. So continue to do that and continue just to go through his progressions and receive it, reading just defensive alignments on passing situations, getting the ball out like he has. I personally thought he played a fine game last Saturday. We went over it last podcast, Clark. I feel like it's just going to be another week of hopefully just staying healthy and continue just to get comfortable with his receivers, with his offensive line, with his running back room, and just being the captain and the commander of this offense that he is. And that's all really I ask him to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, Adam. You know, there's a lot of people, for whatever reason, that was kind of they were still questioning Gunner's last week's performance. Guys, I mean, you know, give him some time to get broken
Let's
in.
See what he does in Knoxville, man.
Right.
I mean, these 2 weeks are what I love the most about it, what I want to see this Saturday, what I wanted to see last Saturday, I've already said it, was how this team looked as far as just the connection, the hustle, the effort, the attitude, and that was going to be my biggest takeaway with how an inferior opponent like these 2 weeks have been. Yes, you can see some flashes, just athleticism, just pure natural athleticism, or seeing how guys have developed in the weight room in these games. But as far as just scheme, play calling, and everything else, there's just not much you could take away from these games, these 2 weeks. It's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is against these type of opponents, man. But I couldn't have been happier to me, and I'm hoping if this upcoming Saturday goes like it last Saturday did, then – I'm going to be happy, Clark.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah. I just want to see some guys flying around to the football on defense. I want to see Gunner. You know, there's one comment on, I don't know, it was on Instagram or YouTube or something that was like, Gunner needs to go through his progression more. And, I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of time droughts with this Mike Bobo offense, especially the screen game, obviously. That's not necessarily something you read all the time. I mean, sometimes there are RPOs that you do read. But a lot of times it's just, hey, get the ball out of your hand.
Yeah. No. I was just going to say that, I mean, yeah, I agree completely in the sense that I think you're hearing a lot of people talk about how he's been staring down receivers and stuff. I personally didn't see that as much or think it's a concern, I guess I should say, going into SEC play. And I guess another big thing that I want to see, you mentioned the screen game, Clark, is to continue to block on the perimeter as well as we did in the tight end, the receiving room, the offensive line, and continue just to be fundamentally sound blocking, because that's where we struggled so much last year on the line of scrimmage, on the offensive line of scrimmage, and also on the perimeter on these screen plays, that it just to continue just to grow in that department, Clark, and just rotate guys on the offensive line. Yep. Get as many people healthy and as many snaps as possible on the offensive line that you can, and find that core unit that can gel. Mm-hmm. And I think getting like guys like Bo Hewley in there, and being and Daniel Calhoun, and then what's his name? Is it Michael Uini? I don't know how to pronounce his name. Name's
Uini.
Uini.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean the guys like that. That I think Hewley's going to be great, mm-hmm. and be able to just get them more reps. That's crucial. That's huge in these first couple games like this, and really have them dialed in and as confident as could be as a unit going into Knoxville.
Yeah. The last thing that I personally want to see from this Georgia offense, and we kind of touched on it here a little bit, but just getting the run game established, getting that going. I want to see a running back. I want to see a running back get over 100 yards. I don't think that's too much to ask for.
Let Nate Frazier get over 100.
Yeah, and I definitely think getting a few explosive plays on the ground specifically will get you over that 100-yard mark. But, yeah, I'd love to see that this weekend and, you know, really see – our team lean on this offensive line and just once, you know, to your point, find those five guys who are solid, who do well, who block well together and can open up some big holes for these Georgia running backs. So, yeah, I mean, that's really all I've got for offense.
Yeah, I don't want to see a balanced offense, really, against Austin Peay. I want to see more heavy run game, like you said, Clark, and continue just to find guys who are going to be able to tote the rock, get guys after Nate Frazier, the Dwight Phillips, the Chauncey Bowens of the world, more carries and touches, more confidence, because right now you're looking at that running back room, and you just mentioned Rod Robb, a guy who's had some touches, been plagued by injuries, not 100% yet, not knowing how much – where. Not, I mean, honestly, at this point, not sure where he's going to be and continue to progress. You're going to have the Dwight Phillips and the Chauncey Bowen step up. You're not looking like you're going to get much production out of Josh McCray, the Illinois transfer. So it's got to be those guys step up. With Bo Walker, he got some time last week. Not sure what's going on there. Seems like something's going on there with Bo Walker. I don't know if it's just playbook, not knowing the playbook. If there's anything else, I'm not going to make any assumptions because I have no idea. But it seems like that we're looking for Chauncey Bowens or Dwight Phillips to be the guy behind Frazier right now. And Dwight Phillips had a heck of a game last week, man. Yeah. I mean, the explosiveness that he had, I felt like just shot me in something we didn't see last year, I felt like.
Right.
As far as just being able to look like he was shot out of a cannon when he touched the football, man, and went through a hole. So excited to see him. So get them as many touches as possible and just get this running game. Just get that motor running, man. Get it in sync. Get it in tune going into SEC play, because we can't talk about it enough that this Georgia team, this Georgia offense is championship. If there's going to be a championship, there's going to be a banner in Athens. It's going to be because Georgia's got the offensive line, the running game humming in 2025.
Yep.
No other way around. Got to happen. Got to happen.
Yep. I like it. Let's go to the other side of the football. Georgia's defense. What do we expect from them this week? Let's start with Austin Peay, actually. I've got a couple of notes on them. Their quarterback is Chris Parson, number three, sophomore. He's a Mississippi State transfer. I think he really fits their offense well, just from the few highlights I saw last week of him running the football and throwing the football against Middle Tennessee State. He can use his feet. He is a running quarterback, so sort of dual threat there. And we got to be careful, you know, as well as I do, Adam, how sometimes we struggle, even with inferior opponents, when there is a running quarterback present. So got to look out for him. They also have a running back named Cortland Simmons, number 11. 5'11", 205, I mean, pretty decent back. And so they're going to try to – obviously, as most teams do, control the clock against Georgia, see how much time that they can tick off the clock with the offensive team out there on the field. So, what do you want to see from Georgia's defense specifically this upcoming Saturday?
Just piggyback off their last performance, man. Just continue to grow in that area. I mean, getting guys more snaps. I love the fact – hear me out. If there's a silver lining in Daylon Everett being injured, it's the reps that these guys, the DeMello Jones, the Ellis Robinsons, Daniel Harris, are getting at the cornerback position. Getting guys reps at that second safety spot beside K.J. Bolden and cleaning up some stuff in the secondary, I think it's going to bode well. Another full game to be able to get some guys some reps there. I love seeing how this inside linebacker room is being played right now by Glenn Schumann. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing Raylan Wilson and Chris Cole lining up on the outside some snaps. You get C.J. Allen in there, the inside linebacker position, just mixing and matching. And the rotation, to have that many guys that that is as talented as they are inside that position room, and to be able to keep them happy and get enough reps out there, but to also just keep them fresh. I think Glenn Schumann, I know this is only a one game sample size, but against Marshall, I thought he did a heck of a job in the rotation and where what he did with those just studs that he has in that room and different alignments. So just seeing them piggyback off of that, Gabe Harris, excited to see number zero again. I think, as you mentioned, Clark, he's poised to have a huge year and continue just to see that defensive line just be able to rotate guys and build. But we know what we have in Christian Miller. We know what we have in Jordan Hall, man, and it looks like Xavier McLeod's going to be another veteran guy who's going to step up big time there. Go ahead, get Elijah Griffin some more reps, man. So being able just to, again, like it is in these games on both sides of the football, is being able to get your depth built up by getting them snaps under their belt.
Yep.
And just playing just fundamentally sound football, seeing 11 hats flying to the football court, and just good discipline out there. And I think Georgia couldn't have been any better. I don't know if we mentioned it last episode. What, was there only like two penalties Georgia had?
I think so, yeah, something like that.
I mean, very, very, very minimal to be the very first game of the year. I don't care who the opponent is. So a lot of very few mental mistakes, I thought. I already dialed in last week. So continue with that as far as being able just to play a clean game and not have any just dumb miscues as far as penalties go or anything like that.
One more note about the defense, and this is something that we harped on last year. There were a lot of complaints last year about this specific thing, tackling. Tackling looks so much better. And, yes, I understand it's Marshall and, oh, it's
Austin. But what else are we going to say or talk about? I know. Yeah, we're going to be positive about it. Oh, yeah. See it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was good. Good form tackling. And, you know, there's not an astronomical difference between the guys that are playing for Marshall, starting for Marshall, and the guys who will be starting for Tennessee. I mean, there's some differences, don't get me wrong, but not astronomical, right? I mean, there's still some bigger guys.
You still got to play fundamental football against both opponents.
Yeah. And so the tackling, I thought, looked really well. We were getting off blocks. Once again, it's Marshall. I get it. But it's doing those little things right. And knowing how to do them right is one thing, but actually going out there and doing them, executing, that's a whole nother. And I was really happy to see that last week, and hopefully that carries over into this week and weeks beyond, because tackling, it simply can't be a problem this year.
No, no, can't have that, man. Not, yeah. And a Kirby Smart defense, I mean,
should never have that problem.
No. So I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
But other than that, I mean, really, you know, I think this ought to be a fun day for the defense. I think we should eat, get some tackles for loss, penetrate the gaps, get in the backfield, and cause some havoc.
Cause some havoc. Continue just to build that chemistry, man. Build that chemistry going into the SEC play. That's what I'm the most excited about. What I echoed last episode, I'm saying it again, is that is the biggest thing right now for a Georgia fan. If you're sitting there trying to critique something against the Marshalls, the Austin Peays, sitting in Sanford Stadium, or if you done got behind the paywall this week, is look at the hustle. You saw Alabama players loafing in a freaking primetime game against Florida State in Tallahassee, man. Mm-hmm. But you saw 11 hats flying the football in Athens last Saturday against Marshall, and I believe you're going to see it again this upcoming Saturday. Stuff like that makes a difference in a championship run. And that culture and that type of standard is set in camp or in the off season for sure. So you just continue to build on it. And seeing where these leaders have these guys, how this week of practice was going from Marshall to Austin Peay, is going to be fun to see. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, the biggest thing. That, clean football, and getting young guys reps, and just no injuries. Stay healthy. That's all I want to see. That's I'm not going to be critiquing if we're not throwing the ball enough downfield. Not going to be critiquing any anything like that. Or I mean, it's going to be very vanilla on both sides of the ball, like it was last week in a sense. I mean, yes, we saw some wrinkles, but just being able to just to see blocking on offense and then, like you said, fundamental tackling on defense.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
That's all I know what to say about
it. I know. I feel like we did a pretty good job covering Austin Peay in this game because there's very
limited. Not much to say about the Governors, man.
There's limited information.
They're going to be fired up. It's going to be a great memory for them boys coming to Athens.
Absolutely.
So excited for them for that.
For sure. All right, so we have a few other notes that don't necessarily relate to Georgia football. We're about to talk about college football's landscape here. There's one last thing I do want to mention sort of about this game, but it has more to do with last week's game. I don't know if you saw this, Adam, but Kirby kind of called out the fans the showing.
I didn't see this.
Yeah.
No.
He said this in a press conference. He said, I think people should love to be at a Georgia home game because there are only so many of them.
That's true.
It's the same thing about our players. We don't incentivize them to run to the ball by saying, oh, we'll go up in your NIL. If you run to the ball, you got to do it because you want to be great. You got to do it because you want to be different. If our fans want to be great and different, they'll do it.
I love it.
I think that's a great quote. Yeah. And, you know, we're guilty. You and I are guilty of leaving in the fourth quarter. Granted, it was after the whole fourth quarter, you know, lights or whatever, the pageantry of that. We got to see Puglisi go down the field and score.
Yeah.
I think he scored.
Now, I'll say this. If I was a student, I'm not leaving. And I know students want to leave and go to the park. And I get that, too, from that. I mean, most normal students aren't obsessed, didn't grow up obsessed with Georgia football like we did, Clark. So when we got there, then it was about football. A lot of them are either from out of state, could care less about to go for the social experience. And then when they're done, or they're too hot, because a lot of those kids haven't really just busted in the heat and can handle that type of heat, so they want to go. And that's fine, too. Whatever. I mean, that's social life. But, yes, left early, but we have small children at the house, too, that we had to get back to that particular game. And it's part of it. But I do get that, the frustration there from Kirby. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that I get it from the students, even though I just roasted them somewhat and some of the other fans, too, and myself included, of why – you leave at halftime. Some people left at halftime. Then against a team like Marshall on a hot August day, then I get their side of it too as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's free country. Do what you want. But at the same time, I think if we are bought in, not necessarily against Marshall and Austin Peay, but if we're bought in to the other home games, which we ought to be.
Oh, Alabama will premier be. Games. If we go to Knoxville and win that game, can you imagine what that game's going to be like against Alabama? Great. Oh, that stadium's going to be rocking. There's no doubt. The past handful of years, Georgia has turned into – Sanford Stadium has turned into a very intimidating place to play. And it wasn't like that 10 years ago.
Yeah. It is good. I mean, we get up for games, right?
Right.
It is really tough for the Marshalls and the Austin Peays, but –
that's anywhere across the country.
That is true. That is true. But anyway, I thought that was interesting that he kind of called out the fans. And
that is very interesting. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, well, somebody brought up the question. They said, how do you incentivize fans to kind of stay the whole game? And that was his response. So it wasn't like he just came out of nowhere saying
this. No, I got you. I got you.
So somebody prompted him.
There shouldn't be no incentive. I mean,
the incentive is you get to watch a game in Sanford
Stadium. Yeah, you get to
watch
a game in Sanford Stadium. And, I mean, if it's 45 to nothing with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter and you want to get home to watch another game or you got obligations, then yeah. But some of these games where you just leave after the end of the first quarter, just get in there and take a picture, say I'm there, and then leave, then that's kind of different. I mean, because I don't know. I mean, that's kind of being hypocritical and critical, just pointing out two different ways and that. But at the end of the day, you bought the ticket. You're entitled to do whatever you want to do with it.
That's a good point. If Kirby wants to buy his tickets, then we'll stay. As long as we need.
Yeah. You can stay until the custodian crew comes. They turn the lights off at the place if you want to. It's your choice. Your choice. Pre-country, like you said.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam. Speaking of the country, let's look across the college football landscape to some other teams here. The new AP poll got released earlier today, and we definitely have a different look at this. I mean, this looks totally different than it did week one. Starting off, number one, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ohio State, and that's kind of obvious that they would jump to that position after beating Texas at home. At number two, we have Penn State, who received 7 first-place votes. At number three, this is a big surprise, LSU.
LSU jumped all the way to 3.
They did.
All
right, yep. Then. They even got 3 first-place votes from 3 people out there in the AP, which is interesting.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
You think they're a little overranked?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think time will tell, but you look at what they have on the field and the recipes for national championship winning teams the past few years is a veteran quarterback and a good defense, especially a good defensive front, man. And it looked like against Clemson that LSU's defense under Blake Baker in its second year has come leaps and bounds from last year.
Yeah.
Just the small sample size against Clemson, but against a very hyped up Garrett Riley, Cade Klubnik led Clemson offense playing on the road at Clemson. I was impressed with LSU's defense with some of the transfers they got in at secondary position, man. And also I believe in a 1 week sample that the quarterback play probably wasn't the best across the country, that Garrett Nussmeier looked like the best to me.
Mm, yeah. He looked pretty good. Number four, Georgia.
Yeah.
If we were to play a playoff today, we would have a bye week.
Love it. Love it.
So that's good.
Good spot to be in right there. Absolutely. I like it, man.
At number five, we have Miami, who definitely jumped up after beating Notre Dame. What?
Are we just going to talk about it? We didn't touch on it last episode.
We got this game.
Okay.
Up, all right. Yeah, we'll talk about those games.
Sorry, I was getting a little ahead of myself.
You're good. Number six, Oregon. I don't know who they played last week. I don't.
Like Montana State or something?
Yeah, somebody like that.
Montana Tech, Montana A&M.
I don't know if they moved from last week or not, but yeah, Montana, they're number
school
6.
Of the blind. Some one of those schools in Montana.
Yeah. Montana A&M, Northern Tech.
East Montana State. A&M.
Yeah, yeah, sounds
something
right.
Like, something like that.
And number 7, Texas. So they fell from number 1 to number 7. Number 8, Clemson. At number 9, we have Notre Dame. And number 10.
What?
Shane Beamer.
Shane Beamer cracking the top 10 in week 2. Good old Shane Beamer.
South Carolina.
Shane Beamer and the culture in Columbia.
Yeah, the Gamecocks. Finally cracking the top 10. Right. I wonder when the last time that happened.
Man, I guess there was a visor roaming the sidelines the last time that happened.
Yeah, probably so.
I don't remember. I don't think there's been any time. He never did. No, that's right.
I think they got close last year at the end of last season. But, yeah, good on Shane Beamer, though, I guess.
Yeah.
I'd love to play them this year, but. Hey, maybe we'll see them in the – oh, my gosh. Could you imagine? What if we went to Williams-Brice Stadium in December?
They came to Athens. That's what's so fun to think about that 12-team playoff. And this is a conversation for a different day. But the potential matchups we talked about, mm-hmm. Josh Pate's prediction was that Georgia goes to Florida and plays them in Gainesville in December. That would just be – you would have to – I don't know what you'd have to do. What I'd have to do to mentally prepare myself to go to that football game. But that's the beauty of college football. And one of the exciting things to look at, a glass half full approach to this new playoff format. Yeah. So, shoot, sitting here just early September, is fun to kind of dream and think about the scenarios.
Mm-hmm. 2 more teams outside the top 10 of the AP poll this week. FSU, Florida State, was unranked, and they jump all the way to number 14 after beating Alabama. Alabama, last week, number 8 team in the AP poll, they drop 13 spots to number 21.
So, wow.
Very interesting. Wow. Not a whole lot of hype anymore for Alabama, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this whole season plays out for them. There's a lot of people in Tuscaloosa hitting the panic button already.
Yeah.
They already are calling for Kalen DeBoer's head. What's the buyout? What's the number we have to raise to get him out of here? So some turmoil brewing right now.
I love it.
I don't know if you saw this, Adam, too, but ULM tickets. So Alabama and ULM play this week.
Right.
Obviously in Tuscaloosa, Bryant-Denny Stadium. Tickets are going for like $10.
Really?
Yeah.
What a spoiled fan base, man.
Oh, I know. Bunch of fair-weathered fans. Gosh, unreal. Oh, man. I hope if Georgia were in that position, we would not be the same way.
We've been in that position.
Yeah, we have. That's true. We have.
Yeah. Do you think in the 2011 Georgia football season when we were – who did we play week 3? Was it Mississippi State maybe?
2011? I don't know.
When we were 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
Lost to Boise State in the Dome.
And then South Carolina.
And then lost to South Carolina at home. And then I want to say we played – it was Mississippi State, I believe. Or it might have been a cupcake out of conference. I can't remember. But we were still in Sanford Stadium.
That's true.
Me.
Yeah.
Those type of times when you go through as a fan in an elite SEC school is what makes you appreciate the run Georgia's on right now. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a time during Georgia football history where we'll go back to some tough times, man.
Oh, yeah.
And but right now we're going to enjoy the ride. Just absolutely. Keep riding the wave. We went through a lot of some down times and a lot of good times before Kirby, and then now it's just been amazing. It's just something uncomprehensible. We've talked about it time and time again on this show, but can't be a Fairweather fan, man. If you love it, you love the people you go to these games with, and you only, like Kirby said, you only get so many of them a year.
Right.
The good Lord bless you with the opportunity to go enjoy it. Take the family, enjoy it.
Yeah. All right, Adam, there's a few week one games we did not talk about just because of the timing of all these. One we just totally skipped over. Let's go back to last Saturday, Tennessee versus Syracuse. Totally forgot to mention that game. Tennessee won this pretty convincingly, 45, Syracuse 26. So I know when we were picking that game, we were talking about how this could be a close game. But honestly, Tennessee got out on a pretty hot lead, scored some big touchdowns, and yeah, from there, Syracuse, I think, just kept shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah. I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you're going to have to look at it as a glass half full in the sense of the offense. And Joey Aguilar, the Appalachian State quarterback that transferred in after the whole Nico deal, the short time he's been on campus plugging in as a starter, I think you couldn't ask for better for his debut performance in Mercedes-Benz Stadium for that offense, putting up 45. On the flip side, I think it's a pretty bad Syracuse offense, and giving up 26 to them might be a question mark, and also some injuries in Knoxville as well on the defensive side of the football kind of gives you a little bit of hesitant pause for concern if you're a Tennessee fan there as well, and then a lot of optimism as a Georgia fan who's going there in 2 weeks as well, that I think the offense and the quarterback position, you couldn't ask for better against the ACC team opening week, but definitely the defense looks like it's took a step backwards just going off of a week one of 2025 so far.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But a good win for him.
Good win, yeah. And Joey Aguilar, I mean, he did look pretty good. Once again, we'll see how that pans out for them. But, yeah, it's going to be fun week three. Miami versus Notre Dame. Miami 27, Notre Dame 24. This was a thrilling game. It was a lot of fun to watch. Carson Beck. Let's just talk about
it. Let's talk about the elephant in the room and beat that dead horse one more time.
Yeah. Carson Beck.
What'd you think, Clark?
I thought he did great, honestly. I mean, listen, I've never once sat on the show, and if you guys can find evidence of me saying this, I'd love to see it. I don't think we've ever questioned his ability, his talent, his athleticism as a quarterback. I can't think of one time where we've questioned
the skills.
The skills.
Right.
It's always just been about the fit, the personality, the character. And, you know, Baylor, shout out to Baylor again. He said it best. He said that he just fits Miami more than he does Georgia.
Oh, 100%, man. And that's why, you know, I definitely questioned and was critical of kind of the body language, what I thought that you were kind of hearing rumors of from the outside looking in, a Butts mirror, how he was with the team last year as far as entitlement and his leadership role. We've talked about it ad nauseum that he last season had other outside things going on. Multiple things it seemed like where it didn't lead for him having chemistry with the wide receivers, with the offense, and just the whole team in general. And I think it was shown after the SEC championship injury and between the first round of the playoffs or the second round with the Sugar Bowl and the SEC championship when he was hurt and kind of just disappeared, ghosted the coaching staff and everything. And I just think it handled that poorly. And obviously, you can't put everything that happened last year on Carson Beck. Yes, there were multiple interceptions, but a lot of drop balls. And so I think it was just good. Two things can be good. Once that, in the sense of Carson Beck needed to leave and can shine at Miami, and Georgia could be better off without Carson Beck.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, he's a veteran quarterback. And like you said, culturally, it seems like he's a good fit. He looked the most happy. He looked way happier than any time I ever saw him in the 2024 season, just from watching on TV when they showed him his enthusiasm, his emotion out there. And, heck, man, I mean, Miami's offensive line played a heck of a game.
Yeah, they
did. I felt like really kept a clean pocket for him. Now, I will say this. At times, I felt like there were some balls that Carson Beck threw to some Miami receivers that – the way the Georgia wide receiver room played in 2024 would have been interceptions, notably that one to the Daniels kid touchdown pass where he made an acrobatic play. It looked like if that was 2024 Georgia, it would have just sailed over to that receiver's head going down the seam and landed right in the safety's in between the numbers on the safety's shoulder pads, right?
Yeah.
So, but a great play by him, but a great job by Carson Beck, man, and seems like there's a lot of enthusiasm. But I was impressed with that the offensive line of Miami and – Carson had a good game, and not the biggest Carson Beck fan of the way he handled. Did you see this? I do got to note this because I had to rewind my TV. And I don't wish him no ill will by him. Go have a great year, whatever. Go to the NFL. But I guess. But anyway, did you hear him say, or was it McElroy said that he wasn't allowed? They had an interview with him, and Carson Beck said he loves Shannon Dawson, the Miami offense coordinator, because he allows him to change things at the line of scrimmage. Mm. That he was not allowed to make changes at the line of scrimmage at Georgia.
Wow.
Did you hear that?
I read that. I thought it was a rumor, but.
No, I heard it, and I had to rewind the TV. Thank the Lord for TiVo or whatever it is these days. You could go back, and wow. I heard it again. Then I had to, like, send a couple different text message groups to get confirmation that I heard that right, because obviously that's you could go back and just on the a TV version of games last year, and anybody with any kind of football sense can see where he's changing a play or making an audible. I do not think that is correct whatsoever.
Wow. Yeah.
In my opinion. I don't know. I'm not calling a liar on that, but it just doesn't – that doesn't make any sense. That didn't make any sense. It's just some of the comments the announcers were saying about him. And then at Georgia last year just kind of – it rubbed me the wrong way. But I'm blinded by red and black glasses, of course. But it just seemed a little – I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
But wish him the best. And
good luck, I guess.
That's right.
Well, Miami does look to be a contender this year for sure. I mean, I think a lot of people they're kind of flying under the radar.
Yeah.
And if they get this, their defense, man, they look good. They ate against Notre Dame. I thought for the most part.
Georgia, Miami, National Championship, Hard Rock Stadium.
Woo! That would be fun. Golly,
any playoff game. Could you imagine Carson Beck versus Georgia's defense, man?
Carson versus Gunner. Wow. That would be poetic.
Ah, man.
And the Georgia just stomp them and steamroll them. That would be awesome.
That would be great.
All right, the last game from last week, and this game took place last night for us. We're sitting here Tuesday night, September 2nd, 11:51. I don't think people believe us when we say that we're out here filming, like, pretty much at midnight.
Yeah, got to, man. We ramp it up, turn it up about five notches.
Yeah, kids are asleep. We don't have any distractions. But this game took place last night. TCU absolutely obliterated
the Horned Frogs.
North Carolina. Bill Belichick, welcome to college football, brother.
Yeah. I mean, it was everybody in the state of North Carolina was at that game. Michael Jordan, Roy Williams. I mean, North Carolina royalty. I think the Wright brothers rose from the grave and came to.
Eric Church.
Eric Church was there. Everybody was juiced for Bill Belichick's debut in Chapel Hill, man. And it just seems like right now it's just a circus with it. And did you see him go to his 23-year-old girlfriend like in the middle of the game on the sidelines? I think it was in the middle of the game.
I think that was pregame.
Was that pregame?
No, there's a great comment about that. Anyway, for the people who don't know what we're talking about, there is a video clip, a very short video clip. Bill Belichick and his girlfriend or fiance or whatever she is goes up to him pregame.
Yeah.
And there's a comment. Somebody said with a caption, they said, Bill, can I have $20 for the concession stands? Like, you know, little kid love asking
go
his
get
dad,
a ring pop.
Yeah, ring pop.
Oh, I love it.
But, man, this was awful. I didn't watch any of the game, actually. I just kind of kept up with it in the background. But TCU 48, North Carolina 14. What happened?
Yeah, somebody said that the last time Bill Belichick lost to an out-of-conference team by, like, three touchdowns, that his girlfriend was in middle school, and it was 11 years ago.
Jeez.
11 years ago.
Yeah.
But enough about that. But, no, from the X's and O's, man, I don't know. The Johnson brothers from Oconee County, you remember Max Johnson?
Yeah.
He's out there with Sling of the Rock, came in. And Jake Johnson, the guy who was recruited by Todd Hartley to come to Georgia but just followed his brother everywhere, he was out there, caught a touchdown pass from Max. So, I mean, it was wild seeing Max Johnson in his drawing Social Security by now, probably. I don't know, X's and O's. Kendall Briles, pretty good offensive coordinator throughout the years, especially in Big 12 country. Out there in Texas as well, replaced Garrett Riley when he left after the 65-7 beatdown TCU received in the national championship. And so I guess this is Kendall Briles, 23rd year. Pretty good quarterback, it looks like they have. And TCU just put it on them. Sonny Dykes, man.
Yeah.
The boys from Fort Worth just went in Chapel Hill and weren't having any of it. So, well, I mean, yes, it's a rebuild for Belichick, but didn't start off on the right foot, I guess.
Yeah, that ought to be fun to watch TCU this year in the Big 12. But, yeah. Interesting game. All right, Adam, I do have to make note of this just because.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's great. And we're going to do this year. We're going to keep up with our actual picks and make it a little competitive.
All right.
And
all
Adam, right. I'm off to a really good start. I'm 7-1, and currently right now you are 3-5 in the standings. So you got to pick up the pace.
Yeah.
You got to actually start making some good picks.
Yeah, I had some bad
here.
Picks, man. You know, so just fade my picks every week and you'll be all right.
The only pick that I got wrong, and well, you got this one wrong too, was Alabama and Florida State.
Good on you, Clark.
Who could see that coming?
You know? Lee Corso did.
He did, yeah, he did. He would be a perfect 8-0 in this league or whatever we're doing. All right, so with that said, let's go on to week two. There's some games we want to talk about here. Not a whole lot of really good football, but maybe something will surprise us. Maybe there's a game in here that is just going to be a game of the century kind of a thing, which I don't think is the case, but we'll see. Let's start with Iowa at Iowa State. Why not? Iowa State is favored by 3.5 in this game. 12 o'clock Fox.
Yes. Underrated rivalry, Clark.
Yeah.
Battle for the Cy-Hawk trophy over there in Ames, Iowa.
Yep.
So you get some guy, Kurt Ferentz versus Matt Campbell. Great rivalry right here. And they've always played like week two.
Right.
And even though they're out-of-conference opponents, you know, traditionally the SEC, ACC, the Florida State, Florida, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, South Carolina always plays Thanksgiving weekend, right? But no, Iowa State, even though they are out-of-conference opponents, have always played week two. Open this thing up. So traditionally, it seems like every year, especially in the Matt Campbell, since he started his rise in Ames, Iowa, has always played against a Kurt Ferentz team that they're favored in. It doesn't matter if they're in Des Moines or it doesn't matter if they're in Ames. It seems like Iowa State's kind of the favorite, and Iowa always pops them. Like Kurt Ferentz gets them. But not this year, man.
I'm with you.
Not this year. Yeah. Give me the Iowa State Cyclones to go 3-0. Big win in Dublin over another rival, Kansas State. And then came back home, got a win last week, and I think they're going to get another win here against Iowa and probably in Kurt Ferentz's last year. Those Cyclone fans love nothing more than pop Kurt Ferentz one time as he leaves.
Right. Kind of a Kirby Smart, Nick Saban situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always, it seems like, and you might look at the history, and it might not be as lopsided as I'm saying, but I'm going to stick to this narrative.
Okay.
Right?
So yeah.
It always seems like that Iowa beats Iowa State teams that they're not supposed to beat. So this completely contradicted my pick here, but Matt Campbell's getting it done.
All right. I'm with you there. Iowa State takes the cake and the Cy-Hawk trophy. All right, next up is Ole Miss at Kentucky.
Yeah.
3:30 ABC. I thought this was interesting. SEC matchup here. I think one of the only ones of the day with two SEC teams playing. We got Lane Kiffin, Mark Stoops. Adam, you know what happens in Lexington. Things get interesting Kentucky.
You know, Mark Stoops has popped Lane Kiffin not one but two times when he wasn't supposed to in the past few years.
One being last year.
One being, I think both of them were in Oxford, weren't they?
I want to say, yeah. The other one was.
So
22.
Ole Miss dominated Georgia State, doing what Lane does. Lane wins games against non-P4 opponents in Oxford, like 65-7 every single time. It's like, that's the score. That's the average score every single time. It's one of those. They're going to score 60-plus on a non-P4 team and some P4 teams. So Mark Stoops kind of was on upset alert last week in Lexington with the strong MAC team, the Toledo Rockets, coming into town. And something just doesn't feel right that I don't think Mark Stoops can get that magic he had from like 18 to 22 back.
Yeah.
From 2018 to 2022 or even earlier in his career at Kentucky when he was building it up to that. And I just think that Ole Miss is just going to be too much for Kentucky.
I'm with you.
And Zach Calzada, I don't believe in him, man. I think Ole Miss defense is definitely along the defense line of scrimmage. Doesn't have any Walter Nolan type transfers coming in this year like they had last year. But I think Pete Golden would dial something up for Calzada. I think Kentucky will have a hard time moving the football. I think Ole Miss scores, and I don't think the Rebels will have any problem in Lexington.
Yeah, Ole Miss is favored by 10.5, and I definitely think they're getting over in this one. Give me the Rebels and Lane Kiffin to win big in Lexington. All right. This is also another
great game right here.
Yeah. Very underrated rivalry here. Kansas, the Jayhawks at the Missouri Tigers in Columbia. Missouri. That place sucks. Anyway, Missouri is favored by 6.5 points. 3:30 ESPN 2.
Yeah.
Who do you like here, Adam?
Clark, this is a great game. They played in basketball last year, the year before last, and it was a madhouse in Columbia. Eli Drinkwitz, I think, had his shirt off, was in the student section. Just people don't realize, if you don't live in that area, obviously I don't live in that area, I've just heard a lot about it, is this is a huge rivalry. For many years, historic rivalry. They have not played each other since Missouri was in the Big 12, which Missouri entered the SEC in the start of the 2012 season. So that's been, do a little quick math, 13 to 14 years since these two teams have played. So a lot of hate here. Even when they're not playing, Missouri fans always talking about how they hate KU. So
right.
I think Ferret Field, Clark, will be more rowdy when the Kansas Jayhawks come to town in a more rowdy environment than it has been since Georgia's been there, Alabama's been there. Mm. Name an SEC opponent they've had the past 13 years. I think the newly renovated Ferret Field the past few years will be the most jam-packed, rowdy it's been. Just because the culture is different in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And the hate for Kansas is so ingrained generationally there in the Show Me State that it's going to be a rowdy environment. And I think Kansas, and I think Lance Leipold is a heck of a football coach. But I think because Missouri's got him at home, a little bit more talent there, I think Missouri wins in a very rowdy environment in Ferret Field. If you have the opportunity to watch that football game, it's going to come on right after the Georgia game, you might think, Kansas, Missouri, not. No, watch. I promise you'll be very entertained.
Yeah.
That's going to be college football at its finest right there. Give me the Missouri Tigers.
If this were in Kansas, I'd take Kansas, but I'm going to stick with Missouri for the same reasons as you just said. But it's going to be a thriller. I don't know if they're going to cover. Missouri will. But they lit it up last week against their scrub, or maybe it was 2 weeks
ago. Yeah, they did. It was Thursday.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I hate it, Sam Horn, man. A guy who got drafted in the MLB draft, got a big injury, I think, in the first couple plays he played. And, you know, there was supposed to be a quarterback battle there, but he's injured. So, obviously, the other guy's the man. So, no quarterback controversy now in Columbia. So, let's see what they do.
Interesting.
Weak schedule Missouri has, too.
Yeah, for real. All right, next game, USF, the Bulls at Florida, the Gators. Gators are favored by 17.5. 415 SEC Network. I'm going to tell you something. USF, as many of y'all saw, popped Boise State week one. Now, is Boise State what they were last year? Absolutely not. But USF is one of those teams, man, you don't mess around with them.
That was a huge win for, I think it's Alex Golich. Is that his name? I
think so.
Yeah, he was the old Tennessee offense coordinator that took over down there in South Florida. And he's somebody, man, that I think is going to be a rising guy in the coaching ranks. So what he's done, I think playing Boise State, beating them 34-7 like he did, was a very nice feather in his cap, and I think it's going to build some confidence going into Gainesville. Now, I don't think that's going to be get the Bulls over the hump enough to win in Gainesville, and Florida played a terrible Long Island team. I mean, the scrubbiest of the scrubs.
Yeah.
So you can't really take away much from that, but DJ Lagway looked pretty dang good, man, and did what he was asked to do. I think just threw like 15 passes. Three of them were touchdown passes, man. Maybe only had one or two incompletions. Mm-hmm. And Jaden Ball, very talented running back, one of the most underrated running backs in the SEC. You think you'll hear more and more and learn the name Jaden Ball as the season progresses. And I think that's going to be too much for South Florida. But I think it might be where South Florida keeps it close for a little bit and kind of gives Florida a good little challenge for a little bit. But eventually I do think DJ Lagway and the Gators pull away.
Yeah. I also have the Gators in this matchup. But I do want to throw it back to, 3 years ago, South Florida went into the swamp and almost – did the dang thing. They almost pulled the upset.
They did, didn't they?
Yep.
I forgot about that.
Final score ended up being 31-28. Now, obviously, Florida
almost
was a little...
beat Alabama and Tampa, too. Saban's last year.
Yeah. Yep. So, Florida, though, yeah, I don't know. I can't even remember where I was going with that. But I don't think they'll cover a 17.5-point spread. That's pretty hefty. So, give me Florida, but I'll take USF with the points.
There you go.
All right. Arizona State travels to Stark Vegas at Mississippi State, 7:30 kick, ESPN2. Arizona State, the Sun Devils, are favored by 6.5 points, which is interesting. I think this number might come down a little bit as the week goes on. Ooh, Adam, do you like the upset here?
I'll let you give your analysis first. I've done every single one. So
I really don't.
What you think.
God, this one's kind of a toss-up for me. I watched a little bit of Arizona State last week. It was night. It was close to midnight I was watching them, so I didn't get to see really what I wanted to see in them. But, I'll take Mississippi State. why not? The home team, the bells are going to be ringing. It ought to be interesting.
If Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State pull this one off, that's going to give him a lot of momentum and start. It's a game he really needs.
Oh, yeah.
After not winning the conference game last year, really on upset alert to some people, to Southern Miss last week to open the season, and he took care of business against the Golden Eagles. And this was just beating a playoff team from last year, the P4 champion at home, would create a lot of energy in his second year in Starkville. But I think Kenny Dillingham and the Arizona State Sun Devils coming to start one win.
Okay. Yeah, I can see it either way.
It's going to be a fun game to keep an eye on.
That will
just
be
to see, you know, how that'll be a fun late night game to watch.
Yeah,
flipping between this one and the next.
I was about to say we'll do the, you know, the recall button on both of
the
these.
The previous button.
And then last but certainly not least, this is where College Game Day is headed next week. We've got Michigan at Oklahoma in Norman, 7:30 kick, ABC primetime. We've got Oklahoma favored currently by 5.5 points.
Yeah.
Who do you like?
This is a fun game with two blue blood programs that are kind of maybe going through the wilderness a little bit, if you will, Clark.
Yeah.
Probably not kind of where fans would think very proud of the program. Obviously, Michigan coming off a national championship 2 years ago, but the big cloud of the Connor Stallions investigation and everything looming over them, and breaking in a freshman quarterback and Bryce Underwood. Two new signal callers on both teams. Both very talented guys. Oklahoma, very excited about the offensive side of the football this year with Ben Arbuckle, new hotshot offensive coordinator coming from Washington State, bringing his quarterback, John Mateer. Some people have him as a Heisman favorite, and a lot of hype on John Mateer. Oklahoma struggled to really get the offense going until the second half against Illinois State and Norman last week. So, but they shine in some areas as well. Brent Venables, always a solid defensive coach, took a $1 million pay cut this year because he just felt it was right.
Interesting.
So, and then Sherrone Moore, kind of a lot of off-the-field stuff he's been going with. What, Michigan beat New Mexico 34-17?
Yeah, it wasn't super impressive.
Wasn't super impressive. I think in Norman, I think Oklahoma and John Mateer, they're gonna get it done. They're going to get it done, but I don't know. I really just don't know.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch either of these teams last week, but I'm going to go with Michigan just for the sake of being different. Bryce Underwood seems like the real deal from what I hear. Yep. Once again, haven't watched much of them, but
first
from what
game.
I hear. Yeah,
first right road environment. Game. A lot of hungry Oklahoma fans.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I can afford to lose a couple
of
games.
You can. I hope you do lose them last two.
Yeah. But, yeah, because otherwise we picked pretty much all the same winners for the other one. So, yeah, let's see how things shake out.
I don't know, man. You know, thinking about it, talk about earlier week two and kind of having some lower marquee games, sneaky underrated games as far as just being a college football fan to be excited about. Mm-hmm. Arizona State, Mississippi State, just fun.
Yeah.
And then Kansas, Missouri, just enjoy that for the pageantry.
Mm-hmm. And then Michigan, Oklahoma. I mean, that ought to be interesting. And that you're talking about two fringe playoff teams there, I would say. Dark horses and
if things go right, absolutely. Right. You're exactly right. Great call on that. And then Iowa State again for the pageantry.
Yeah,
just what college football is about.
Mm-hmm.
With Kurt Ferentz possibly playing Iowa State for the last time.
Mm-hmm. So some interesting games coming up. A good week of college football ahead. We've obviously once again got Georgia versus Austin Peay. I got a score prediction here in just a little bit. You do too, Adam. We're going to wrap this thing up.
There we go.
But first, if you did enjoy this episode, what we would love for you to do is to leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We read those. I love them. I love looking at them. So does Adam here. And it does help us grow this Georgia football community. And if you're watching on YouTube, comment below your score prediction for this week. Georgia versus Austin Peay. Let's hear it. If you're coming to the game this weekend, also, we will be section 108, row 60. We'd love to see you guys.
Yes,
come
we would.
Stop by, shake our hand, tap us on the shoulder. It's really easy to find us. We are literally the last row on section 108.
There we go.
So
I love it.
Good stuff. All right, Adam. This week, if you're going to the game, it's 3:30 kick, obviously.
No, it's 12 o'clock kick.
It's 12?
12.
Adam.
No, this is embarrassing.
No. Hold on now.
It's a high noon kick, Clark.
I thought it was
a high noon kick.
Listen, I thought it was too, but I looked.
Don't tell me that.
Look. Let's go to ESPN to confirm this. 3:30.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Should we check another?
No, I guess it is 3:30. Where did I get that it was a 12 o'clock kick? It is a 3:30
I think we all
kick.
Assumed it was a 12 kick.
Did we really?
Yeah.
How did we miss that?
I don't know.
How did I miss that? I've just assumed since this summer it was a noon kickoff.
I mean, this ought to be a noon kickoff, and we're all against noon kickoffs, but...
Well, this, Clark, you have just broke some news to me.
Yeah. So, wait, does this change, like, the prediction for you at all?
No, but it definitely changes my Saturday plans. I would have been amped, ready to go here. I mean, to strike out to Athens early.
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. Anyway, all that to say...
All right, then, continue. You know what you're talking about, man.
3:30 kick. You guys are coming, once again, Section 108, Row 60. But if you're sitting at home, remember, this is the paywall game. We hate the paywall game. Ban the paywall
game. We hate the paywall game.
Yep.
Hate the paywall game. This is I got to go up and look at my refrigerator, the magnet that I got in, like, July. I think this kickoff has been announced for months now. And for this whole time, I've been thinking it was noon. It was like 3:30 the first game, noon the second game. So,
Well,
that's embarrassing.
Anyway.
That's embarrassing.
Yep. ESPN Plus, SEC Network Plus is what this game will be on. Follow us this week at Row 60. If you aren't currently, look us up on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. We are present on all four of those platforms, and we'll be posting some stuff for you guys to see during the game. So, score prediction, Adam, I've got one, and then I'm going to turn this over to you. You wrap this thing up, and let's do it. So, my score prediction versus Austin Peay, I think Georgia scores 7 touchdowns. No field goals needed. 49, Austin Peay, 3. They get in field goal range and kick a 47-yard field goal. We'll call it in the third quarter.
I like it, Clark. I like it. I'm right there with you. I don't care, Clark, if they're playing this game at 12 a.m., 3:30 a.m., whenever it is. Georgia's winning this game 45-0.
Nice.
We're going to get shut out this week. So, the second, third team defense – scored a late garbage time touchdown. Marshall did, gave one up. So I think this week we keep Austin Peay off the board, 45-0. And what we're hoping for is injury-free football game. Continue to build some depth, get some guys some snaps. Let's enjoy another great day in Sanford Stadium, another family game. Should be some reasonable ticket prices. So strike on out to Athens, man. No, it's 3:30 now, apparently. That's news to me. So get fired up this week. We're in the full swing of it. One more game, and then it's time to buckle up and go to Knoxville, Tennessee,
yes,
for a very rare early season showdown on the road on Rocky Top, man. So we'll be gearing up for that next week. But first, let's take care of business against the Governors. Have a great rest of the week. College football. Football Saturday is upon us yet once again and will be until the end of January. That is music to my ears injected into that vein right there. It's time. Go Dawgs!
Go Dawgs!